Thanks very much, Shane. Thank you.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
I should stand up for this. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome along to the launch of our book, A Page from My Life. Yay! Yay! That's the way it should have went. And they'll be clinking at glasses and all that. Of course, we're living in level 5, so it's a virtual launch. What does a virtual launch look like? I didn't ask that question. Oh, I'm talking to myself. Yes, I am. Well, a virtual launch looks like trying to get as many voices on the air between now and 4:30. As many of the 150 contributors to A Page from My Life as we can get on in the time allotted, which is 90 minutes. So I think we're gonna probably have in the region of 50 voices between now and 4:30, including our 4 judges. You probably want a little history, the whole thing. Well, even if you don't, I'm going to give it to you anyway. So back in the middle of lockdown, back in April, we came up, dreamt an idea because we knew that people were at home and they wanted something to do. And we sort of half knew that there are a lot of people out there who were frustrated writers or aspiring writers or just people who had a story to tell. So we put it out there. We said, listen, we're looking for people to write a page from an autobiography that they may or not write, may or may not write. So an imaginary autobiography of your life. Think of those pivotal moments. You know, an early love, your first love, the loss of a baby, a funny moment like putting sugar on your chips, or something that was pivotal, something that changed your life. And we said, and write it down, you have 500 words to do it and send it in to us. The good people at Easton said, we'll give you know, a cash fund, a prize fund. So we had, you know, I think it was a couple of thousand euro to give away, and there were winners. But then as it went on, it grew legs. So it did. And we were taken aback, I have to say, even flabbergasted by not only the quantity of the entries, but the quality. And we started thinking, there's something here. We're onto something here. There's a lot of very good writers out there. There's a lot of very good stories that haven't been heard before. What do we do with all these? And of course, the obvious answer is a book. A book. You have to put it in a book. So one of the days anyway, during the lockdown, probably June or May or sometime then, I was thinking, yeah, it'd be great if we did, but we need a publisher and all that. And Patricia McVeigh from HarperCollins was listening, and she dropped us a text or an email or a phone call or a Zoom or something like that. And she said, we might be interested. So we got on to Patricia and she put us on to Connor, who's the boss man at HarperCollins. We spoke to him and we gave him the pitch, because it felt like that. You were giving him the pitch. This is it. It's people from all over the country. It's personal stories, very strong. You could fit over 100 in a book. We could do it for charity. So Connor listened attentively and he's going, we're new to this game, as in they've never published an Irish book before in Ireland. So this would be the first one ever. It's a big deal for us. And I said, well, it's a big deal for us as well. And it's a bigger deal for the people who will feature in the book. They'll be published for the first time, Connor. So he listened and he took it in. And then a few days later, he got back, yeah, it might be something there, might be something there. And then it grew. And HarperCollins got fully behind us. And then we said, we have to choose a charity. And as you heard Jane McKenna on yesterday, and anybody hears the story of Laura Lynn and the amazing work they do and how it came to be, can't deny that it's a very deserving cause. So the book is going to benefit Laura Lynn. So we've been talking about it an awful lot since back in April. But today is the day. Today is the day we launch A Page from My Life. I've never given birth, but I would imagine it's akin to that. In that, you know, this long gestation period, and then it's out there into the world, and you don't know what's going to happen. You can mind it and guide it along the way, but so it's a very exciting day, particularly for the 150 people. Most of them, I think nearly all of them, have never been published before. So now, at some stage in the future, they'll be able to go into a bookshop, open up a book, and see their name and their 500 words in black and white. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that just amazing? And just to give you a flavour of how it's affecting people, Declan O'Connell has been on to us, and he probably puts it better than I did. He said, and so there it is. And there's a picture. There it is on the bookshelf. Bill Bryson on one side, John Grisham on the other. I was tempted to place the book between Joyce and Kavanagh, but that might have been pushing it a bit. Still, there we all are, 150 tiny droplets in the vast ocean of Irish literary history. Today, a page from my life will begin to populate bookshelves all over the country and beyond. It's humbling to think that total strangers might read your story, then maybe come back to it a second or a third time. Something in it might give them a reason to smile on a bad day, might recall an emotion from their own lives, might evoke a memory from their own past. Maybe, in 100 years' time, somebody might stumble across the book in a drawer and marvel at the power of this Darcy fella for gathering these literary titans together in one collaboration. Maybe none of that will happen. But it's nice to think of the possibilities in a year when nothing and anything has seemed possible. I just want again to thank the team for conceiving of this fabulous project, HarperCollins for the outstanding job they've done with the book, and express my delight at contributing in some small way to the magnificent Laura Lynn Foundation. It's been a blast. Declan O'Connell, page 67, and possible future owner of 0.667% of an Irish Book Award. And Declan. And Michelle's been on, page 111. Dear team, thank you for all your work and for making us all feel so special. I've lost count of the amount of times I've dropped into conversation over the last few months that I was on the phone to my publishers. Or sorry, couldn't answer your call, I was emailing RTE about my book. And I went into overdrive altogether when I'm post-book award nomination, forwarding the link to every WhatsApp group on my phone. All my family, friends and even casual acquaintances are well versed in how amazing the book is at this stage. I just hope I haven't overkilled it. My notion of keeping my story anonymous in my village has completely gone out the window too. Once the photo of the cover arrived, I told anyone who would listen about it, don't tell the solicitors. Looking forward to celebrating with all you and raising lots of money for Laura Lynn, Michelle O'Brien. So, one of the first voices, who are we going to go to first? Owen Paul O'Rouche. How are you doing, Owen?
Hello, Ray. How are you doing?
Do I call you Owen Paul or Owen? Or what do I call you?
Oh, you can call me anything. Okay. You can call me anything. So whatever's handy, it's Owen Paul or Paul or whatever.
But congratulations, there in the book, page 204.
That's it. Thank you. Yeah, it's great. A great privilege.
It's one thing, but it's two things. As in, two things is the title of the book. Or yeah, title of the story. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's you. Where do we start then? You left school. Where did you go after school?
I left school, I took a year out and worked in a supermarket, the happiest year of my life. And then I went to the seminary, went to Maynooth,
right,
did 3 years in Maynooth. And then they sent me to Rome and I spent 2 years in Rome. And that's where the story kind of starts off, when I came back from Rome after being kind of, what is the word, disillusioned in one hand and opening up this Italian world in the other, in which I am now.
Right.
So.
And you had two things to tell your mother.
Yeah.
And you were, she was staying up with your brother up in Drogheda, and you would meet of a Saturday on Grafton Street and go into Bewley's
that's right,
for a chat. She had idea what the two things were, had she?
Oh, I'd say she did.
Oh, did she?
She did. My mother was one of these, I mean, I know everybody raves about their ma, especially the Irish ma, but she was well ahead of her time. She was like, she had read Lord of the Rings and had us reading it the first time round, not okay, the second time round.
Right, okay.
She was ecological from the very start. She was buried in an eco coffin. We had a hunt high up and low down to get it. You know, she was way ahead of her time.
Yeah,
so
yes,
she knew, but of course everybody will say that about their ma, you know, but she was a special lady, you know, she really was.
Okay, so, well, just read us the last paragraph then.
Sure.
So you'd hooked up with your ma outside of Bewley's on Grafton Street.
Yeah. We went in and sank into a big red booth. I'm gay, I announced before her coat was off. I know, she said. You might as well tell me your hair is a different colour. It doesn't make a difference. I love you. I love you as you are, as God made you. My heart exploded in gratitude and tears slid down my face. She held my hand and listened and listened and listened. Suddenly she jumped up. Oh my God, what time is it? We'll miss Mass. I couldn't bring myself to tell her my second secret, that I no longer went to church. Judging by her smile as we sat into the pews of St. Theresa's, though, I guessed she already knew.
And she knew you'd left the priesthood at that stage, or did she?
Oh, absolutely,
yes,
she did, yeah. She saw, she'd come, my late sister, God rest her, she died very suddenly, but she always tells the story, told the story of coming back after visiting me in Rome with my mother on the plane, and she was in convulsions of tears, and the Aer Lingus hostess said, are you all right, madam, are you okay? And my late sister turned to the hostess and said, well, what way would you be if you left your son behind in a mess in Rome, you know? So she knew I wasn't happy in Rome.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And obviously, again, all that was part of it, Ray, you know, trying to figure out who you are. You know, in life, it's never black and white, as all those stories tell you. It's never straightforward, you know?
And this is a big question, because we've only started the show and I've only met you.
Mm.
But
yeah.
was in any way going into priesthood sort of sanctuary from your sexuality?
Not a chance. It's the first thing I said to my spiritual director. He nearly fell off the chair. I said to him, you know, he asked after our first session, he said, have you anything you want to say? And I said, yeah. I said, I'm a gay man. I said, but I figure I can be a celibate gay man as well as a celibate heterosexual man. And it wasn't a factor in that. In the sense of, for my own case, and that was one thing I believed, you know, that I could be celibate and a gay man. And
And a priest.
And it's ironic that my brother's a priest. And, you know, we get on very, very well, even though we're chalk and cheese, but we love each other deeply. And we have very different opinions and things. And the whole idea of gay marriage was, you know, was an interesting thing, because I was kept on saying, well, I presume you're going to vote yes. And he would say, well, I don't know, you know, because obviously, again, him being a priest and all that. And it was interesting because we had one kind of very animated discussion one night when I brought out Panty's speech from the Abbey. And he said to me a very poignant thing, because for people in religious life in Ireland, it's not easy either. And he said, Panty had talked about checking herself at the crossroads, you know, at traffic lights. And he said, well, do you realise I have to do that nowadays, because people drive past and shout all sorts of things from the car? So, it's not, again, everybody's journey is different. I hate that word journey around and kill me.
But they were just talking about that, what you've just talked about there on Liveline today.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested to know, because Pope Francis came out recently and said that, yes, that gay marriage is fine, but not within the realms of the Catholic Church. Was there a big reaction to that in Italy?
Not really.
No.
No, in the sense, again, Italy is a very peculiar place. I mean, I always think of Graham Norton when he used to do that segment on his show, you know, where he got people to stand up and you had to decide whether they were gay or European, you know?
There's that kind of... Did he do that? I never saw that.
He did, absolutely. And I mean, there's always that kind of very vague, you know, you could people wearing yellow trousers in the place where I am now. You'd never get it at home, you know? It's like society is a very, you know, it's a complex thing. And that's what I suppose what the point of this story was. So like when I was, that was 1995.
Yeah.
And Mummy's reaction was probably very forward for those days, you know?
Yeah.
And, but it was something that I felt dearly, you know?
Well, it's a lovely piece and well done, page 204. Stay with me because, as I was saying, we're trying to get as many voices in as we can. So we asked people to drop us little messages recorded on their mobile phones. So let's hear a few of those. Starting off with Vivian Hennessy. Come in, Vivian.
Happy launch day, everybody. This is Vivian Hennessy, and you can read my story on page 174. Congratulations to all the authors.
My name is Caroline Nolan, and I'm page 152. Cheers.
Joey, come in.
My name is Joey Stenson. You can find my story on page 13 of the wonderful book, A Page from My Life. I'd like to just ask the listeners to please get behind it now and buy a copy today and support the ever so important Laura Lynn Foundation.
Oh man, Joy.
I'm Samantha Long from Dublin, and my story called Two in One is on page 221 of A Page from My Life. Do buy an Irish book this lockdown. Cheers.
Aloha, Roisin here. You can read my story called Hawaii on page 178. So proud to be a part of this, and congratulations and thanks to all involved.
Hi, I'm Gail Cashin, page 200, inspired by my beautiful little daughter, Rose.
Bye-bye.
Ah, isn't that lovely? There you go. There are some of their fellow contributors, Owen Paul.
Beautiful. They're fantastic. I mean, I've been dipping in. I have to say, I'm be spoiling myself with the sweeties that they sent me for my 50th. So I have a cup of tea at night and a couple of stories and a couple of nice chocolates.
Great.
And because I think you have to go through it that way. You can't kind of read it, you know, from cover to
cover.
No,
you can't. You'd be exhausted emotionally if you did.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. I'm in bits half the time, you know, and I'm bad enough as it is. You know?
Right. Well, great to talk to you, Owen. Mind yourself.
Thanks. Take care. Thank you for everything. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, so over the last couple of weeks, we've got a number of our contributors just to record their piece. Now, we'll be talking to some of them because they warrant a chat as to what happens next. But others, they just stand alone. Like Bernadette Carroll.
I think I'll write for The Fox by Bernadette Carroll.
I think I'll write for the fox, my mother would say when one of her hens got old and stopped laying. What use was a hen if she couldn't produce eggs? A waste of layer's mash. Still, deep down, my mother was fond of her brood. We had Rhode Island Reds and Brown Leghorns, names I found hilarious. One of them was missing for 2 days, and my mother was fretting about her, searching the fields and the ditches. She found her closer to home, trapped behind a sheet of galvanised metal in one of the sheds. Staggering and disorientated, the hen was immediately approached by a rooster, who had his wicked way with her there and then. My mother was horrified. It wasn't that she wanted after being stuck for 2 days, she told me. She was funny without meaning to be. One time we were shopping and wanted to get something to eat. I tried to open the door of a cafe, but it was jammed. She said to me quite seriously, "Maybe they're closed for lunch." She had a sweet tooth and found it hard to resist temptation. My father was strict about not starting on the pudding until Christmas Day, but my mother found a way around it. She used to cut slices from the bottom so the pudding kept its shape. It just got a little lower every day. She was matter of fact about death, if it wasn't an untimely event. When her cousin died, her words of comfort to his daughter were, "He's not the first Farley to die and he won't be the last." When her sister passed on, she peered into the coffin and declared, "She told me I could have that cardigan." When it came to her own illness and she knew time was running out, she said to me by way of consolation, "So you'll forget about me in 6 months." The day I called the ambulance, Father Sheeran called to the house while we were waiting. As he gave her the last rites, she said to him, "I'm not too bad. I just have to get some phlegm off my chest." He said to her, "It's the only thing you have to get off your chest, Anna." As she was being helped into the ambulance and we were preparing to follow it, she said, "See you later, alligator."
Well, I saw my baby walking with another man today. See you later, alligator.
There you go. See you later, alligator. They're on from all over the world. Niamh and Gary listening to the show in Florida. Congrats to all. Honoured to be included in the book. That's Niamh McAnally, whose brother used to work here. Sitting patiently waiting to sign books. So exciting. It might be a while until I can, but I can wait. Well done, everyone, says Anne Battersby, who's in the book as well. I penned the story on page 19 of the book, making my mark. Louise McCarthy, listening with pride to the launch show from London, where I work as a barrister. So somebody else. Susan Carey.
How are you?
Good to talk to you again. Now, you've written a poem especially for today.
Ray, I kind of wrote a poem, but if I knew you were going to ask me to read it live on air, I would have put a bit more effort.
Right, we'll just go for it. We have to get through 50 voices today. That's our.
I know.
Okay, go for it.
Ray set us a lockdown aim. A page from my life was its name. 500-word stories of our failings and glories. Life's ups and life's downs were fair game. So today the book is out, so proud to be in it, no doubt. Page 15 is my win. It's all for Laura Lynn. Buy a copy. It's sure to sell out.
Yay! Thanks very much.
There you go, Ray.
Well done again. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yes, you're right. It's a big ad for the book. Page My Life. It's available now. We should be saying it's available in bookshops now. But it is. And I see the most bookshops around the country are adapting and they're going online and they have a click and collect service. So I was looking forward to going up to the Debray Books in Stillorgan, which is a lovely little bookshop. And most bookshops are lovely, aren't they? They're just a haven. Just go in, the smell of new books, and you look around and you think to yourself, even if I had 10 lifetimes or 100 lifetimes, I couldn't possibly read all these books. And with all this choice, where will I start? Well, you can start with A Page of My Life because it's bite size, you see. It's literally bite size. Literally and literary bite size. So as Owen Paul was saying there, you can just dip in, have it by the loo or wherever, read a couple every night, then go back to it and another couple, and you can use it. You know, you could be reading another book and then just dip. I think it's an ideal book for people who maybe think that they're not readers and they just are a little bit daunted by the thing of reading 333 pages from a book. So The Page of My Life is perfect. Anyway, it's there. And on page 123 is David Ralph. And I think you'll enjoy this. Have a listen to David.
David Ralph, Maria. My heart fluttered seeing the name flash on my phone. Kind of surprised to hear from you, I said, hoping my voice wasn't betraying me. We hadn't spoken in almost a year. I'll never forget it. Her last words before hanging up were, "Don't call again." Anger and disappointment and tears in her voice. "Just seeing if you're okay with this virus and all." I took to the hills. I'm home in Tipperary. I'm home in Sligo too. Got out of Dublin. Dublin. Our old life in Dublin. Our old house in Dublin. That night we spoke about the pandemic, how everything seemed suddenly more complex but simpler too, the strange sense of clarity amid the uncertainty. That night, in my boyhood bedroom, my mind raced. After many hard, long months, I felt I'd at last accepted things were over between us. I'd done as I was told. I hadn't called again. I hadn't texted. I hadn't anything. 2 days passed. 4, 6, finally a week. This time I called. We were careful to keep our talk on safe ground, keep it off the stupid things I'd done. The calls grew regular, as did those dreams I'd been having of her. The dreams that were so tantalizingly real when I'd wake, I'd expect to find her there in the bed beside me. The dreams were as old as the good old days. I was surprised by how little seemed to have changed with her. "In the garden?" I asked one day. I dug out the raggedy old lawn, planted a new one with fescue grass seeds on top of the tons of fresh earth I'd rolled. "As you left it, you didn't put the decking down?" I thought there'd be some crude, many-storied concrete monstrosity annexing my lovely grass by now. I'd had 1,000 thoughts. "No. And the shed? As I said, exactly as you left it." Visions from epic romances came to me as I lay in my room as I walked the hills at home. Lovers separated by revolution, by war, by planetary upheavals, making their way to one another over mountain passes, across deserts, through thornbush. "I'm back in Dublin," she told me another day. "We were calling all the time now." "Oh, since when?" "Last night." "How's things there?" "The garden is insane." "Really?" "There's so much growth, it's wild." I let out my breath. I heard myself say, "I could give you a hand with it." "Could you now?" she said in a teasing voice. "I could," I said quickly. "And how would you get here? There's checkpoints everywhere." I'd studied train schedules, bus schedules. I'd measured out the miles on foot from the station to the house. I had a whole alibi ready should I be stopped. "I'll find a way," I said. A pause during which the blood throbbed hot in my throat. Her voice was almost a whisper when she spoke next. She said, "Okay, so." I repeated, "Okay, so."
Someone tell the author what I really think of her, 'cause I'm afraid.
Okay, so, Rav, how are you?
Good, good, Ray, thanks.
Yeah, everybody wants to know, are you and Maria still together?
Yes, yes, that's the answer, yeah.
So, do you reckon lockdown has brought people back together?
I think so, yeah. I mean, obviously that story is quite a personal story to me. But, I mean, I was aware of other people kind of contacting, you know, not just old boyfriends, girlfriends, partners, lovers and so on, but sort of reaching out to, you know, long-lost friends, people you might have been in touch with for a while. So, yeah, I definitely think it wasn't just me, you know, sort of... you know, reacquainting with sort of, you know, people from the past.
Yeah. And was it that you had time to think and Maria had time to think and that's why she made that initial call to you?
I haven't really asked her.
How will you go away and ask her then, for God's sake? That'd be my first question. Why'd you call? What were you thinking?
Have you dialed the wrong number?
yes, there you go.
But, I mean, I imagine it did. I mean, speaking for myself anyway, I mean, I was reduced to being a 38-year-old man back in my boyhood bedroom in my parents' house. So you certainly have a lot of time to take stock of your life and maybe kind of thinking about maybe where things have gone wrong as opposed to where they've gone right. You know?
Yeah. And did you have to get Maria's permission to send in the 500 words?
I did, yeah. She read it and vetted it. And,
And was there any inspiration from normal people at all, or did you watch it?
I have watched it, I have read it, yeah. It wasn't in my mind now when I was writing it, I don't think.
I suppose you could say that Sally Rooney was influenced by life, and you were just recounting your life.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I suppose I realised something had kind of happened, you know, in that this sort of year hiatus had passed. And yeah, as I say, probably if it weren't for the lockdown, I don't know, would have been touched at all.
I can hear you're getting very uncomfortable now. It's one thing writing down 500 words about your love life, but talking about it on national radio is a different thing completely. So I'll say okay so to you, Ralph, and thanks very much and well done. Good luck. See you. Bye. Lisa Howley, how are you doing, Lisa?
Hi, Ray, how are you?
Good. Page 42 of A Page for My Life. Your story stands out because not everybody attempts to swim the channel. When are we talking? What year was this set in?
The beginning of the story is set in about 1980, and then the story itself is 2005.
Okay. Some days are made for Bovril. So you'd the training done after promising to your dad that you were going to swim the channel someday, and you were ready and everything was in place, but then the weather got in the way. Read us the last paragraph there.
Okay. Rather than make me nervous, the storm raging outside filled me with relief. I was convinced that Mike would call us very early in the morning to say the forecast had got it wrong and that the swim would have to be postponed. It sounds strange to say that I was relieved, but I was so incredibly nervous that I would have grabbed any excuse with both hands for the swim not to go ahead that day. I couldn't explain it, but I was convinced I needed another day to prepare. Just one more day.
Right. Dot, dot, dot. To be continued.
Dot, dot, dot.
Yes, yes.
Chapter 2 was written, Ray, believe it or not.
Yes, yes, yes. So did you swim the channel?
I did.
Hey!
I did. I was a third Irish girl to do it.
Congratulations. That is an amazing feat.
Thank you.
Yeah.
As I say, it was something that came to me when I was 10 and saw an ad for Bovril on telly. And I was lucky enough that I was put in a situation where I was able to fulfil it. So, yeah, it was good.
You say Alison Streeter, channel swimmer, drinks Bovril. And you remember turning to your dad at that moment and saying, I'm going to do that someday. And you did.
That's right. It's funny, Ray, how many people have said to me they remember that ad, but nobody else has said to me that they had the same thought about it.
Yes. there's an element of madness in swimming the channel, I think.
A little bit.
Yeah, well, sort of unbridled determination and single-mindedness, which not all of us are capable of. Did you calculate how many miles you had to put in before the actual swim itself?
I never did that, actually. It's something I might do for chapter 2.
All right, okay.
But
okay.
I know I swam about 40 or 50 kilometres a week for about the preceding 9 months.
Right.
So that's quite a whack.
And what's the moment? You know, when you do that, and you're in a very small club, the number of people who have swam the channel, where is the moment? Is it in the middle when you think you can't go on any further? Is it when you hit dry land? What is the moment?
My first hour was dreadful because the weather had been terrible, and all I was thinking was, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to do this.
Okay.
But about 4 hours in, the weather improved, the sun came up, and I remember distinctly swimming with a big smile on myself saying, I'm here, I'm doing it, I'm going to do this. Nothing's going to stop me now.
And that was playing in your head?
That was in my head.
Go, Lisa! Go on!
Thanks, Ray.
Thanks very much, Lisa. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well done. Congratulations. 42, page 42. It's the diversity in the book. There's just so much in it. And so many emotions. It's truly amazing. And I know you would expect me to say that, but, you know, I say things sometimes and I don't necessarily believe them, but it is an amazing book. Wonderful programme celebrating a wonderful book for a great cause. So delighted to be part of a truly terrific project. Well done and congrats to all concerned, says Jim Gray, page 92. Huge congratulations on the launch of Page My Life. I'm honoured to be included in the book. Really magnificent, said Eleanor. Magic, today, true to my story, the baby is stuck to me. My 3-year-old is screeching about something she can't do and Rory is on the toilet. But I'm loving to listen to my fellow writers while sitting among my mundane chaos. That's Kira. who I think spoke about being a mother and the equivalent to mothering as being a sergeant major. Now, there was frivolous ones, there was huge sporting achievement, and then there were poignant ones like Josephine Harhan's 500 words on page 198 and 199. And Josephine's on the line. How are you doing, Josephine?
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Thanks so much for talking to us today. So your story is Mothers Doing Time.
Yes, yes. It's about my son who's in prison and the fact that all of us mothers are doing the time with them, and the fathers and the girlfriends and everything else.
Yeah. It's a very moving piece. And, you know, you say it's not about those in prison, this particular story, but it's about all their loved ones, as you've mentioned. And it's keeping a face up, isn't it? And that must be a huge emotional drain on you.
But people forget that your son, they don't see him around. They might think he's away in Australia somewhere. They kind of forget that every day that you're kind of walking the same path as your child is.
Mm.
And I know a child is a big man now, but everybody's doing the same thing. And it really struck home to me, you know, when we got the video link, because we couldn't have the one-to-one visits with the prison. And then the video link didn't work. And I was so upset. That's what spurred me on to writing the piece.
Yeah. So how often do you get the video link now in lockdown?
Every 2 weeks for 15 minutes.
My word. Yeah. And how often would you have gone in to visit your son?
I would go as often as I was left. And, you know, it keeps him going and it keeps me going. And it's well worth doing. And, you know, he's a funny fella, so I'd have a great laugh with him.
Yeah. And you told him that you'd written the piece and you let him read it, and he's probably listening now today. What was his reaction when you read the piece to him?
So it's all good, ma'am. Everything we've seen is all good, ma'am.
Right.
Everything's all good. He, you know, whatever. I said, do you mind? Anyone that knows me knows him in person. And it's the strangest don't matter. Yeah. So that's it.
And was it breaking point when you were looking forward to the 15 minutes and, as you describe in the piece, you put on your best clothes and makeup and everything and you're ready for your 15 minutes with your son, and then Wi-Fi let you down?
Yes, and it's because I think of him waiting. I can do other things. I can go around the house. I can do stuff. But he's cleaned up as well, and he would keep his best practicing for a visit. So yeah. He's showered and gotten ready. Maybe hasn't gone to the gym. It's a big part of his day.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he's really paranoid. He thinks that I'm going to die. He keeps telling me I'm 60. And
cheeky.
He's telling me I'm going to die. So then I know he's thinking, well, now there's something wrong at home and they're not telling me.
Right.
So then, of course, he rings then straight away to see is everything all right.
Yeah. Of course, I would imagine prison is punctuated by things like this, you know, a FaceTime call, a trip to the gym, meals, all of those things. And you need those things to get you through the day.
Well, you do. It gives your day structure.
Yeah.
And it's also good for their heads. But it is heartbreaking, Ray, to see, you know, I was in the prison recently, well, one of the last visits, and a young girl came in with a new baby to show the father of the child. It was his first opportunity to hold the child.
Mm.
And he was showing the baby to the other people in the room, because there's about six of us in this visiting area, showing it to the prison guard, so proud of his little boy.
Do you know, which I don't know if you'd be interested, but that book we had him on, Rutger Bregman, it's called Humankind. And he spends a full chapter talking about the prison system in Norway. And it is the antithesis of what we do here. And the outcomes are way better. It's worth a read.
I will look at that.
Yeah, so you're saying here it's 3:58 and in 2 minutes his cell door will bang and he'll sit and eat whatever is on the prison menu today and look at TV till 5 when the doors open again for an hour or two. And I'll stop crying and pretend none of this hurts. But like every mother, father, wife or girlfriend, I too am doing time. When will he be out, Josephine?
Middle of next year, hopefully.
Okay.
And
great. Okay.
I can't wait for it.
Well, congratulations on the book. Congratulations on the book.
Every story is so brilliant. I've enjoyed every minute of reading it, and thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, great.
I really do appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, Josine. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Okay, we've another recording now from Niamh Linehan. And Niamh is on page 161. Come in, Niamh.
Artie by Niamh Linehan. Artie loves to jump. He's jumping right now to music played on the John Creedon show on the radio. He wants to know the names of the songs and the singers. It need only to be played once, and it might be played a year later, and he will name the names. Forgets nothing. Except how to be around others. Not true. He does know how to be around people who accept him. Rio Teslin, Rio Taku, Nord Serena, Nord Isabella, cargo ships. His timetable of each and every day now, in quarantine. The cruise liners have stopped. Oriana, Artania, Marco Polo. They were his year, his month, week and day. It's how he learned time, calendars, months and places. Port of Cork, Ringaskiddy, Cove, Deepwater Quay. Before he was two, he would perch against the windowsill and study the liners approaching the harbour. His first word was guck, meaning stuck. Stuck for a word, stuck in a chair. But soon he learned mum and dad, and then he learned the names of the ships. He learns the Port of Cork schedule each year by heart. But they haven't arrived or departed. They are somewhere in cruise liner quarantine. When I explain that people are sick and that when they are better, the ships will come again, he can smell my uncertainty. The liners are on fire, he yells, or the liners are exploded, or the liners are in a crash. He means it's a catastrophe for him every day. His beautiful mouth quivers, tears roll. He angrily wipes them away. He is missing the big bush in the entrance of the schoolyard too. The big bush goes, he pleads, and I answer by raising my arms and swaying slightly and then moving my body around fast and suddenly. This makes the bush move from a gentle breeze to moving in a storm. I become the bush because he misses school many times a day. He doesn't want to see his teacher's face on Messenger face to face, yet he beams when he hears Mr. O'Lynchig's voice on loudspeaker. How are you, Artie? In his soft Ballyvourney tone. Artie answers, how are you, Artie? A pause. Artie's making music, I inform Mr. O'Lynchig. Well done, Artie. Are you playing your fadog? Artie is jumping with pleasure. Artie's playing his fiddle, Mr. O'Lynchig, I reply. Great, Artie. It's good to talk. Artie says, turn it off, turn it off, indicating the phone. He is beaming with pleasure. He loves Mr. O'Lynchig, and it's mutual. He's overwhelmed. I don't have to explain because Mr. O'Lynchig gets him. Artie goes to the sofa, pulls the black tablecloth over his head. I turn off the phone and join him under the dark comfort for a cuddle, a giggle, a cry, and a sigh. We are a bit guck at the moment.
I can see clearly now the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day.
A little bit of the Hot House Flowers and I Can See Clearly Now. I think you should make this an annual event, says Anne Davey. Make it this your toy show. I have the title of my next story, and it needs a home. You see, there are loads of people listening now and go, I want to be in that book next year. Page My Life Too. Can't wait for my copy. Congratulations. Good luck. That's Esther Ruby. How are you doing, Esther? Loving this as Eileen. I tried to have the whole book read by today, says Maggie. But the stories are too lovely to rush. Perfect for dipping in and out of. And delighted to be included. Pages 215, 216, and doesn't give a name there. I'll be able to look it up. And I think Owen Paul and I share an enviable surname. I'm Joan of the Rushes. So he's Owen Paul or Roosh. So that'd be of the Rushes. Congrats and greetings, Owen Paul. That's Joan Grennan in Sligo. Rush must be her maiden name. Right, A Page of My Life, available now. You can click and collect or go online and buy it. And at a minimum of €3 per every copy of the book goes to Laura Lynn. And if you didn't hear, Jane McKenna herself and her husband Brendan lost their daughters, Laura and Lynn. And as a result, they set up Laura Lynn, a children's hospice up there beside Leopardstown Racecourse. And the proceeds from the book are going to that. So it's a very good cause. We've more people to meet and more stories to hear after a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Thanks for all your texts and good wishes on email as well. Page 61 is Philip Ormond. Like many others is the name of Philip's piece, and he's on the line. How are you doing, Philip?
How's it going, Ray?
I'm just reading the end. So you write your 500 words and then at the end you go, by Philip Ormond, a person of gratitude, a proud father of two beautiful girls and now a frontline worker using my past to hopefully benefit others. And it is your past that you deal with in your 500 words. So where do you want to start, Philip?
I suppose I start at the end, where it leaves off with the dot, dot, dot. I'm still alive. I didn't die. And my life has come full circle since that one horrible day in my life.
Yeah. So this, you outline your lowest point, I suppose. You were sleeping rough. How long were you sleeping rough for?
At that time, it would have been about two to three years, I'd say.
Right, and you were addicted to heroin.
I was, amongst other drugs, that was my drug of choice at the time, yeah.
What age were you?
At that time, it would have been about 28. I would have started on drugs when I was about 14, 15.
And had you got a regular place where you slept?
Not really. I was from Palace, so I was mainly all around Tallaght, but then things got bad up here, so then I moved into the city centre, so it was just all over the city centre, as you did. You just didn't know where you were sleeping on any single night, to be honest with you, like.
Right. Doorways, that sort of thing, alleyways.
Anywhere, to be honest with you.
And would you have a dedicated sleep bag, you know, or would you have one?
No, I'd linked in with a lot of homeless housing with services, and they give out new sleeping bags, so you'd have a spot, you'd hide it for a few nights, chances are you come back, it could be the road cleaners that would take it away, it could be anyone just take, and they'd just get a new one.
You get a new one, right, okay. And was it just a sleeping bag, or would you sort of embellish it, for want of a better word, with cardboard boxes or anything like that?
Whatever was available, right? It depends on the weather. If it was lashing, you'd look for anything to put over you. If it was all right, you'd be grand. You'd just get into the sleeping bag and tuck in. Once you had the drugs at the time, nothing else mattered, to be honest with you.
That's it, yeah. And that was your thing every day. The first thing you thought of in the morning was, where am I going to get my fix today?
100%, that was it. I was controlled by a drug. I was controlled by a horrible... Yeah, drug that just brought me to horrible places, which, thanks be to God, I somehow got through, and I'm very grateful and thankful I got through, because like many others that didn't, and yeah. I've seen it and witnessed it all, so I'm just grateful that I have the chance to actually share and talk about this today. I'm just so grateful. Like.
And thanks so much for sending the 500 words into us. So, heroin, obviously, you know, you're driven by it, and it drives you to crime, doesn't it? Because you have to get your fix.
Yeah, well, it drives. Yeah, crime for me, it was crime that was where I turned. Some people beg, some people you just do whatever means possible just to get that money for that drug. Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah.
Okay. So there's horrific detail of, so it was 3 o'clock in the morning, and you woke to what you thought was a shower of rain, but it was somebody pissing on you.
Yeah, that was. I laugh at my nerves because I wish I could turn back time. And but I suppose now in hindsight it's great because I'd love to ask the man what was actually going through his mind. But at the time I wasn't thinking like that. At the time I would have got up and I'd like to fight with him, but I hadn't got the energy or the confidence. My whole life was being turned inside out, and I just cuddled back in, cowered back into the bag, and that was just my reality at the time. And that's still. That was on my mind when this came on the radio that day. I was out my girl was pregnant with my child at the time out at Mars back garden, the sun was shining, and I heard this and I just said, we have to actually tell this. And that's why I wrote this down. She's a witness, she would tell you, I wrote this down in 10 minutes. It was just bang, bang, bang. I knew exactly, and I had to get it on my chest. But that moment, I can still smell it from time to time. I still go back to that place from time to time, but It's a good place to look back and to realise, and I'm still there, to be honest.
Yeah. So tell them where you are now. You it's there. You've two children.
I've two beautiful daughters. Yeah, Kayla and Bella Rose.
Right. And you work as a frontline worker. What sort of a frontline worker are you?
I might give you a laugh, Ray, but to be honest with you, when I was homeless, I'm actually from Talla, and when I was homeless, there's a local addiction centre, and I used to actually sleep outside the centre at the back doors or wherever, and a man used to work here, used to come in the mornings and let me in and let me have a shower and look after me. Unfortunately, he's passed on as well, but I'm now working in that service.
Right.
I'm now working in that service, helping other people out, and it's amazing. It's just an amazing time, to be honest with you.
I'm not suggesting that people, you know, do what you did to qualify to do what you're doing now, but you are extremely qualified because of the life you've led.
Yeah, well, that's what I hope people that... I remember years ago, because of my past, Ray, like people said, you're going to see somebody. I wouldn't go to see them because it was all... I just always think, God, whatever, you went to college for this and that. I wanted someone that I could relate to.
Yeah.
And I hope that my past will help someone come in and relate to me, and that'll help them. That's my hope.
And there's no hankering back to... What a ridiculous question. There's no hankering back to being addicted to heroin and sleeping rough and having somebody urinate on you. There's no hankering back to this. No, definitely not.
And life still goes on, Ray. You know, like we still have our trials and tribulations,
yes,
but...
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd never turn back to that. No way.
Well, listen, page 61, Philip Ormond, thanks so much for taking the call and congratulations on getting into the book, Philip.
And Ray, before I go, I just want to put out there to all them authors and anyone. I've always said this, I have a big story to write. There's a big past and a big future after that. And if anyone ever wanted to sit down and have a word with me about writing a book, I'd love to do it.
Okay, I don't think you need a ghostwriter. You're well capable of doing it yourself from reading your 500 words.
Yeah, but it's putting that everything together. The thing I always struggled with, even with college, was the academic side of things. So it's the writing and all that. But I do my best. I'll do a choice. I'll just put that out there, right?
Okay.
I'll put out the universe.
Okay, Philip. Mind yourself. Bye. See you. Bye.
God bless. Thank
bye.
You. Bye.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, I've loads of greetings to get. I've a cart wall populated with people from all over the country saying good luck and best wishes and all that sort of thing. So I've sort of ignored them, but I'll get to them after 4 o'clock. We have to talk to our four judges as well before we officially launch the book. But before all that, Laura Lynch is on page 320. Laura.
The Night Shift by Laura Lynch. A long, narrow corridor. Pastel-coloured baby elephants and bunnies skip along beside you on the walls. By day, bright and busy. By night, dark but alive. Rows of glass windows separating each room. Old wooden window frames, thick with many repaint jobs. A-shaped yellow warning signs remain dotted around on dry floors, a memory from the busy day. The fiery red emergency trolley poised, ready and waiting, like a fire engine hovering near the runway. The radio hums, always on, forgettable soft rock classics. 19 tiny cots, 19 tiny babies. Vulnerable, overwhelmed parents by their side. Tubes, alarms, nests and blankets. Love, so much love. We share smiles through the glass. Handover begins, the night is ours. 23:20. I glance down through the panes of glass, My eyes passed the settled infants and mums to the last room. A wealth of knowledge has been passed from an experienced, gentle nurse to an exhausted mum, heavy with doubt. 23:35. My eye line again drawn through the glass to the same room. This time there's a glance. A locked eye that everyone's experienced before, where information is passed without words. I'm on my feet. I don't dare break the stare with the room for the whole walk. The baby is limp and quiet. Panic from those too close. Careful calmness from those in charge, us. The corridor swells with help. Roles are assumed, military style. It's a well-rehearsed play. Ordered chaos. The trundling red trolley springs into action. Fluid sets, needles, vials, labels, checked and checked again. No delay, working, working, keeping time, precious time. 23:55. A decision to go to surgery. Minutes pass, roles for transferred are assumed. Kiss your baby, a gentle order by the team lead, never forgetting that parents are observing every last moment in the room. A kiss to the head. The pain is indescribable. A breeze flows through the ward. Every emergency door propped open. An eerie quiet lingers. Painful glances from the remaining mums and dads, having witnessed the fragility of life. Holding themselves, their babies, their hopes and fears. Notes written, calls made, routines reassumed. 18 tiny beating hearts completely unaware. Innate rituals of nursing continue. It's what we do, care and compassion, whatever the situation, we continue. 20 past midnight. For a moment, everything stops. In a sterile room, on another floor, a pause to consider every option has been thought of before the outcome is agreed. There's nothing more we can do. Everything has been tried. An overwhelming event for this little body. It's all too much. Rest now, little one. 1 hour of a 13-hour night shift. A shift I'm so privileged to be a part of. Some nights are remarkable for devastating reasons. 19 little heartbeats at the beginning of our shift. 18 at the end. A heartbreaking privilege to be a part of.
That was Laura Lynch, obviously a nurse, and very moving piece. And that's Lyra there, New Day. Anish Tosha now in the Preep Skeleton and Oakdale, Kieran O'Farda. Gurmagat Kieran O'Farda, thank you very much. 51551radio.ie. The quiz of today will return tomorrow, Friday. Today is a special day. We're launching a page from my life in the company virtually of a lot of the 150 contributors. It's available now. Shop in your local bookshop. A lot of them do click and collect. Or if you don't have a local bookshop, you can order online. It's there. It's $14.99 and a minimum of €3 will go towards Laura Lynn. Let's see what you're saying there. Philip's story was incredible and the little note at the end telling us that he was a proud dad and frontline worker was inspiring. Michael Snee here, page 235, sitting here with the book in my lap. Can't believe I made the 150. I'm following the story as the authors read their pieces. Adds another dimension to the book to hear the voice of the creator. Best of luck. Best of luck to you. And well done to all, says Patricia, page 185. Absolutely chuffed to bits, says Joanne, page 136. Eileen Egers is there. I'm listening here with Jay. Such wonderful stories. I'm so honoured to be included in page 107. I'm enjoying listening to everyone's story. And as I said, we asked some of the contributors to send us a voice note just so we could hear their voices. So we've put together a few of those. Click that one there. Yeah, bring it down. And then, hello, Anne. Anne?
Oh, I didn't see you there. My name is Anne Battersby and I'm page 189 in A Page for My Life. Cheers.
My name is Patsy Lee. And at 75, I'm delighted to share the story of a childhood pet called Johnny on page 249. Enjoy this great book.
My name is Verena Cunningham.
and set in the small town of Coothill in County Cavan almost 30 years ago, is my little snapshot from my life. It features on page 84 of the book.
Hello, my name is Geraldine and I'm on page 266. I couldn't imagine that someone would think my writing and my story would be good enough and even to put it in a book. It's a great feeling and thanks a million.
Hi, it's Aoife here, saying hello from page 3. Not that kind of page 3.
Go on, Aoife. What I can't get over is how brilliant people are at reading their own stories. Like we rang them during the week, they were at home, and we said, okay, when you're ready. And they all did it in one take. Like Rosaline Dalton from page 97. Come in, Rosaline.
When the Chips Are Down by Rosaline Dalton. Chipper chips were always my favourite. On a day out to buy my communion dress, we stopped by a cafe and I, of course, ordered my treasure treat. While my grandmother had soup and my mother had a sandwich and tea. While they were chatting away, I decided to put some salt in my chips. Not paying attention, I accidentally poured sugar all over them. I was stunned and jumped from my seat, roaring and making a big fuss. I was very firmly told to sit down and be quiet. My grandmother, not wanting to waste the chips, started to blow the sugar off. I could see from where I was sitting that droplets from her mouth were dive-bombing onto my plate, not to mention that these droplets were living with the same pair of dentures for years. The same dentures that were thrown in the bin by mistake, only to be retrieved, washed and deposited straight back into their place of dwelling. Years of tea stains clung to every nook and cranny, such that most of their white colour had disappeared, making them appear like beach pebbles after the tide had gone out. I decided there and then that I wasn't touching those chips with sugar and droplets attached to them, even if she did manage to get all the sugar off. Meanwhile, my starving tummy thought that my mouth had gone on strike. There, my grandmother said, all the sugar is gone. Eat up. Eat up? Was she going insane, I thought. Who in their right mind would put one of those contaminated chips in their mouth? Now stone cold, saliva soaked and semi-sweet. Taking a deep breath, I shouted across the table that I wasn't going to eat them now or ever and demanded a new plate of chips. We now had a non-paying audience watching this midday theatrical event. With that little outburst, I was ejected from my seat by my grandmother, marched into the toilet and told in no uncertain terms that I was to walk back to my seat, eat the chips and sit there until she and my mother had finished their snack. I was getting nothing else to eat. She saw nothing wrong with the plate of chips. In Africa, there were little children starving. They would eat the chips and be glad of them, she said. I was marched back to the table to start the agonising task of picking out the chips that had escaped most of the sugar and saliva avalanche. A task that no child should have to complete just after buying their first Holy Communion clothes. We left the cafe with my mother complaining. I should watch what I was doing in future. My grandmother had been kind enough to treat us to a snack, she said, and I should apologise to her for my behaviour. After all, she was old and should be respected. A lesson duly learned.
Yeah, it sounded like Rosalie being a fan of Chesney Hawks, so a bit of Chesney Hawks there, and I am the one and only. Now, Holly Hannon, how are you doing, Holly?
Hi, Ray, how are you?
Good, congratulations, you're one of the youngest contributors to A Page for My Life.
Oh, yeah, I know, when I heard it, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah,
I was so delighted, like, to be included in it.
What age are you?
I'm 18.
Okay, and you're on page 44, Ribena with Ryan.
Yeah.
And the Ryan concerned is Ryan Tuberty.
Yeah, he is.
Right, okay. And how long ago did this happen?
This happened back in 2014 when I was in sixth class.
Yes, and we better establish that you didn't have a drink with them. It's
no, I didn't. No, definitely not.
You were involved in the spelling bee, which used to appear on the Ryan Tuberty show. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you were well read at that age.
Yeah, I was. I was the stereotypical nerd of the class.
Okay.
You could say, you know, I had these pink braces and wore glasses that were 10 times too big for my head. But anyways, when I won it, there was a huge buzz around it because everyone was convinced that I was going to win.
Okay, and when you say you won it, you won the Sligo
Yeah, I won the county final.
And what was the name of the school you were in?
Caulry National School.
And how big is that?
It was a small enough school. It's situated out in the country. So, yeah, like I said, you know, it was a small enough class. So I suppose when I won it, everyone, like, it was a huge, huge thing because the semi-final, you know, Ryan Tuberty was there from RTE and, you know, the documentary was being made about it. So everyone was just really excited.
Yeah. And your dad was interviewed on the way in.
Yes.
Yeah. So will we take it up from there? Will we take it up from there?
Yeah.
So he was asked, how do you think your little girl Holly is going to do? Okay.
Yeah. So I suppose in the run up to the semi-final, it was just, you know, there was a huge buzz around it. Everyone, I remember I actually forced my dad to go into town the week before and I got him to buy an Oxford dictionary. I'd say it was the size of a small bungalow, you know, just so I could learn every single word in it. But he was convinced I was going to win anyways. He was the number one supporter
at
the time.
Why don't you read it from there then? So he's asked, how do you think Holly's going to do? And... page 45 there. Okay. Oh, she's going to win it from there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, she's going to win it. We're certain. Come on now, Holly. We're going in, my dad said firmly, giving me a slight push in the door. The next thing I knew, I was staring at Ryan Tuberty and most importantly, the trophy taunting me. Right, guys, we're going to move on to the first round. You're going to get asked a word. You'll spell it. And if it's wrong, you're out. All right. We nodded. Holly, you're up first. Your word is blackcurrant. My sister relaxed behind me. Ah, she's sound. That's easy. A baby could spell that. I opened my mouth. It was my time to shine. But in my moment of panic, my mind went completely blank. Blackcurrant? What's a blackcurrant? Is it a fruit or vegetable? How many K's and C's are there? Ryan's face began to morph into a blackcurrant. Suddenly, all I could think about was Ribena. Blackcurrant, I gabbled. B-L-A-C-K-U-R-R-A-N-T. Blackcurrant. Their faces died. Slowly, my soul died. Sniggers from the other three contestants beside me.
Oh.
Ryan's forced smile. Oh, I'm sorry, Holly, but that's incorrect. You missed out on the C. A horrible, nasty word to trip up on. Go and give your family a hug. Yeah, we all know what he really meant, though. Bye, loser. I got up and sank back into the seat beside my sister. Her face resembled a question mark. How did you do that? And to this day, readers, I still don't have an answer. So I hope you enjoyed this page from my life. And at least if nothing comes from this, I can say my original claim to fame was the RTE Spelling Bee documentary, now on a CD, banished to my attic.
Yay! yeah, so B-L-A-C-K... C-U-R-R-A-N-T, just in case you didn't know.
Yeah.
So I'd imagine nobody has remembered that over the years and brought it up in conversation.
You know, it was one of those things, Ray, when it happened, everyone was like, oh, don't worry, Holly, it'll be forgotten about in the morning. And I can say, 6 years on, my friends and family have not let me forget it. It's the running joke that goes on.
And where are you at now in school?
I'm doing my Leaving Cert this year.
Great. Okay.
I'm in the Ursuline College, Sligo.
Yeah. And you're back. You're back in. And how are things?
Yeah.
In school?
Yeah. No, we were all delighted to be back. You know, just for a bit of normality and stability, I suppose. You know, with everything that's going on at the moment.
Yeah. Well, for those people who slag you about your spelling of blackcurrant, what I would do is buy a number of copies of A Page of My Life and give it to them and. Put a dog ear on your page and go, there you go now. Look at me, published author. So, okay, right, Holly. See you. Bye. Well done.
Thanks very much.
Thanks very much.
Bye.
Bye. And if Holly is one of the youngest, then Patricia Byrne is one of our oldest and Caroline, her daughter, is on the line now. How are you doing, Caroline?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good. Now, I got you last week. Well, we got you, myself and Niamh, to read out
your mum's contribution.
And it was by way of a letter. So I'll let you introduce it and then we'll have a chat about it afterwards. Here we go.
So this is a letter that my mum, Patricia Byrne, wrote from TLC Nursing Home. So, dear Ray, the prayer book and me. Please don't switch off yet. It's not too boring. For my 21st birthday, my precious friend and flatmate gave me a prayer book, which cost 1 shilling and 6 pence. I cherished that gift for dear life, and some years later I had it leather-bound to protect it against the slings and arrows of life. Recently, I wanted to recap on the Ten Commandments and reached for my prayer book, only to discover it was written in Latin. I had clean forgotten. With such a heavy heart, I closed it and returned it to my locker. I am presently in this nursing home, with all the time in the world to think of my 21st and my young days. My dear friend is living nearby in Malahide, and we still keep in touch. In a minor way, I like to think I returned that cherished gift by introducing my good friend to her husband. Sadly, both our darling husbands have died. May they rest in peace. Still, I have that prayer book which I have carried from Carlow, Kildare, where I changed digs 4 times, then to Donabate and Swords in Dublin, and finally, here to my home in TLC. We, the prayer book and I, look a bit weary and frayed around the edges, but we have endured, as has my friendship with my friend Mary, 71 years later. Yours, Patricia Byrne, 92 and a half years old.
And on the line, Caroline Williams, her daughter, aged... No, I'm sorry.
51 and a half. The half is very important in our family.
When was the last time you saw your mum?
I saw my mum. I had a window visit with her on Saturday. And it's just a half-hour visit. But my sister-in-law snuck along as well, Margaret. And Margaret just kept saying to my mum, "Nana, congratulations." And my poor mum was just mopping her brow because she just keeps saying, "I don't understand. Like, it's just a small little piece." But as I say to her, "But Mum, it says so much."
Yeah.
And it packs a punch.
It does.
It really does. And I was only talking to her friend Mary this morning. So they really were the best of buddies.
And the friendship that's spanned over, you know, it sounds like 7 decades, could be 8 decades.
Absolutely. And through thick and thin, my parents' lives, they weren't that easy. My father was a psychiatric nurse, and we lived in Portrane and Donabate.
Oh.
So there was my eldest sister Hilary, my brother Greg, and my brother Martin. But sadly, my brother Martin passed away when he was 2 and a half. And then my sister Molly and I came along, but unfortunately my sister Hilary also passed away.
Right. So your mother has seen an awful lot of hardship in her life.
She has, but you know what? My mum and my dad, they were so incredibly selfless. And their attitude was just to give. In honour of little Martin, my mum volunteered for the St. Martin de Porres charity. In Dublin, and she knitted garments for the poor of Dublin. But she's just amazing.
And Caroline, do you know what I'm going to do? Because Mary is such an integral part of your mum's little piece, I'm going to send you out a book to give to Mary as well, because she's featured in it.
Okay,
and will you send your mum our best wishes and give us...
Oh, I will.
When you can, give her a hug for us. Okay, thanks, Caroline.
Get going. Okay, I just want to say thank you so much, because the sense of self-worth that my mum has gotten from all of this is just amazing. And I can't thank you enough. So thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
On top of the 150 people who made it into the book, I have to thank everybody who sent in their 500 words, because without the volume, we wouldn't have been motivated and driven towards publishing a book. So in a way, you're sort of victim of your own success, if you know what I mean, because as the numbers went up, we thought, we're onto something here, we better publish a book. And we got 4 people involved to judge, so you can blame them if you're not in the book. So Donal Ryan, good afternoon, Donal.
Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
We're running out of time. Eimear MacLeod is there as well, and Owen Colfer and Emily Pine. I'll go to you first, Donal. What was it like when you got your first book into your hand?
Oh, sure. I mean, it was just an unbelievable feeling. But I must say, Ray, it's a joy and a privilege to be just a very small part of this huge book. I don't think a book has ever brought so much happiness to so many people. and it's just so good. You know what? It's such quality. And it's a fantastic thing.
Ah, that's lovely. Eimear, congratulations, Donal, on being nominated for an Irish Book Award.
Oh, thanks, Ray.
You were supposed to say congratulations back on that. No, I'm joking. I'm completely joking, Donal. I'm completely. How are you, Eimear? How are you?
Hi, Ray, and congratulations on the
most
amazing book.
So, complete Aisling back in the day. How long ago is it now? It's not too long ago. Is it 4 years ago?
2017, we had the first book.
Only 3 years ago. Wow.
Yeah.
So, what was it like?
Oh, well, I was only thinking earlier, and I was talking to Sarah, who I write the books with earlier, and we were saying, I remember we thought our book was going to be out on a Friday, and on a Thursday afternoon, our friend Imogen sent us a picture of the book on the shelves in Dubray on Grafton Street. We nearly got sick. Like, we couldn't believe those people putting their hands on it and paying money for it. And I remember the staff in Dubray said there were mad women coming up going, my friend wrote that book! So it's just... but I, like Donal was saying, like, I'm actually so proud that my name is in this book, A Page from My Life, with all these stories. Like, I'm actually so proud of it.
All right, that's lovely. Listen, it was premature, I suppose, the shelving of your book. Owen tried to intercept his book. Owen Colfer, how are you doing, Owen?
I'm doing good. My first book is Benny and Omar, and that's like 1998, so it's a little bit before, But my Jackie's, you know Jackie, my wife's sister, was going out with the postman. So I got Jackie to drop me down to the post office on a Friday. She dropped me down because parking in Wexford is terrible. And I waited at the gate for the box to come from Dublin, from O'Brien Press. And I saw the box. The guy showed me the box and then couldn't give me the box. So I had to wait till Monday.
Because he had to deliver it to the address on the box.
He had to. He said, like, it's a federal offence. I don't know if that's true.
No, but, we don't have federal offences in this country, but you yank you.
So I had to wait the whole weekend, which was very frustrating, but eventually I got it.
So Emily, your experience of being a published author for the first time is more recent.
Yeah, 2 years. So I guess I'm the baby. And along with all the people who are publishing the page from my life, my mum videoed me opening the box with the books. So she has this kind of hilarious video of me dancing around my kitchen going, it's real, it's real. because I don't think until you actually hold it or see it, you think it's real. And it's such a thing. We're normally so busy with our everyday lives. And I hope everyone who's publishing this book gets to say, to stop, you know, and say, look, this is what I did. Because it's so rare that you get to do that.
Yeah. Well, listen, while you're all there, thank you so much. Because I think a good part of the number of entries we got was the calibre of our judges. There's something odd about that, though, that people want to be judged by very good people. You would think the opposite would be the case, but there you go. So, Donal Ryan, thank you very much. Good luck in the awards. Eimear, thank you. Owen, thank you. And Emily, thank you very much. Thank you all. Thank you. Thank you. Now, at this stage, if it was a real launch, we'd be popping the cork. And Niamh brought in a bottle of non-alcoholic champagne. And I removed the wire mesh around the top. And during the ad break, it went and popped on its own. So we don't have the pop. But we do have voices from around the country again, which we have to bring to you. Frances Harney, how are you doing, Frances?
My name is Frances Harney. And I wrote Keeping in Touch, pages 187 and 188 in A Page from My Life. It's a privilege of privileges to be part of this publication. To conceive, accomplish and realise this beautiful social record during lockdown is truly phenomenal. And to choose the Laura Lynn Children's Hospice couldn't be more fitting. A book by ordinary people for extraordinary children.
Thanks, Frances.
Hi, everyone. I'm Aoife Chaibhánach. I'm page 336. The 149th writer is born.
Hey!
My name is Caroline Heffernan and my story, Moyne Road, is on page 296.
Gary,
Hello, my name is Gary Martin, and I'm a published author, and I still can't believe it.
Hey.
Many thanks to Ray and the team for making this happen. You can read my story, The Opener, on page 86 of this wonderful book for a wonderful cause.
My name is Olivia. Whilst I might sound refined, I once heckled an elderly poet in New York.
Look at you.
Who was just 1 foot from the grave. You can read all about it on page 11 on a page from my life. Cheers.
Cheers to you, Olivia.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best book you can buy this Christmas time. My name is John Gagan, and I feature on page 32 with a story called Photo. Cheers.
Cheers.
Maggie Burns here. I'm on page 272, and I'm thrilled to be part of this wonderful project. Congratulations to everyone. Thanks to The Ray D'Arcy Show for making it happen. And I hope it's a brilliant success for Laura Lynn. Cheers.
Cheers. Congratulations to you, Maggie.
I'm Emma Parishon. My story is called The Black Hole, and it's on page 138. I just want to say a big cheers to Laura Lynn Children's Hospice for all their great work. Please buy a book and support a great cause.
On page 231, you'll meet me, Elaine Wilburn, as my 9-year-old self, trying to negotiate a high wall and a complicated friendship. I recommend reading it with a bowl of Kellogg's Frosties that you bought in Quinsworth.
There you go. That's it. Officially launched, A Page for My Life, available in all good bookshops and elsewhere. Thanks so much to Niamh and Mark and David, who worked on the show today, and Fiona upstairs, and all our 150 contributors, and everybody at HarperCollins, and Penny and Rachel, who read the initial entries, and everybody who worked on the book. I'm sure I'm leaving somebody out here. And we're back as normal tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.
It's The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.